Well, good morning. So excited that you guys are here with us this morning as we dive into part two of this series that we are calling Mastermind. And if you're here for the very first time, or maybe you're checking us out online, or maybe this morning you're just here for the very first time during this particular series, these next 4 weeks are all about, you guessed it, our minds. And this series, like so many of the other ones we do around here at CORE, is this acknowledgement that we aren't afraid to talk about some of the messiest parts of our lives. And it's this acknowledgement that in so many facets of our lives, we all have messes. We all have struggles. We all have things that we are dealing with. And during this series, what we're acknowledging is this truth, that all of us, when we look hard enough and get honest enough, we can admit that our thoughts, our minds, are some of the messiest parts of our lives. Our minds are incredibly complicated. And every single day, every single week, every single month of our lives, we find ourselves battling anxiety and worry and fear and depression and negativity and pessimism in our lives. And there are so many moments where I'm sure you feel this as well, where you've battled those things for so long, and there comes these moments where you think you're finally turning the corner and you think you're finally improving. And just when you start to get confident, all of those thoughts begin to press back in on you. And a circumstance of your life takes you right back down the path. And because of that occurrence in our life that's happened over and over and over again, and that occurrence that's happened in the lives of the people around us, right? We look at our friends and our coworkers and our family members, and we see their struggle with anxiety and worry and fear and depression. And we see them struggle with it day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year. And what we begin to reserve ourselves to is the belief that there just must be no way out. That because I'm struggling with it and they're struggling with it, this must be the way life is meant to be. And we find ourselves in this place where we're stuck. We find ourselves thinking that there's just nothing we can do to improve our lives and our thoughts. Time and time again, we find ourselves looking back on our own life. We find ourselves making irrational decisions. We find ourselves looking back and wondering how we could have thought that was the best possible option. We find ourselves reacting and responding in the same unhealthy way because of those thoughts that just keep pounding into our brains again and again and again. And what I know about myself, and maybe you can relate to this, we find ourselves feeling stuck in our minds and in our unhealthy thought processes because for so many of us, there are these moments where we look back on our lives and we find ourselves asking this one question. See if you can relate. What was I thinking? How could I have thought that that was the best possible option? How could I have thought reacting in that way or doing that thing was the best outcome that I could have? And for some of us, we found ourselves doing this when it comes to our finances, right? We started a new year and we knew we needed to get healthier when it came to our finances. And so we created a budget. And week after week went by, and we were doing so good at holding to the budget. And then we passed that one store. We passed that one lot, and it was like that thing was screaming at us, "You have to have me. Your life is going to be so much better with me than what it was without me." And we find ourselves in the moment making the impulse buy and blowing our budget. And 10 days later, or maybe 10 hours later, we find ourselves with that thought rushing over us in the midst of our buyer's remorse. What was I thinking? How could I have made such an irrational decision and blown my budget on that thing that now actually makes me feel worse than before I had it? For some of us, we experienced this with our diet. We started the year with a New Year's resolution that we were going to get healthier, and we wanted to get our beach body going a little early this year. And so we made all of these goals, and we were sticking to it. I mean, here we are, March 1st, right? And we haven't eaten a fatty thing in 2020 yet. But then Friday, someone brought in the box of donuts. And we convinced ourselves, they always talk about cheat days. Cheat days are good. This is going to be a cheat day, and just one won't hurt me. And before we knew it, one turned into the entire box, and we had a dozen down. We told ourselves it was only going to be one spoonful of ice cream, and all of a sudden, The Moose Tracks carton is completely empty and we find ourselves staring at the bottom. Maybe we've done this in our relationships. And we knew before we got into this relationship that it wasn't going to be a healthy one. And we held out and we held strong and we didn't give in. But then that person, they said that one really sweet thing. And we found ourselves really lonely in the moment. And so we dove in. And we said, we're just going to give it a chance. And we're going to save them. We're going to rescue them. We're going to bring them up to our level. And then we got into the relationship and we realized really quickly that it was just as toxic as what you knew it was going to be before you even got in it. And by the time we find ourselves being able to make the decision to get out of the relationship, we look back and ask the question, what was I thinking? How could I have made such an irrational decision? We do this in our responses all the time, right? Someone says something to us, and we know we need to respond in a healthier way. We know that what they said might not have been right, but the way in which we respond frequently isn't right either. And so we set out with that one in-law that always says the same thing that drives us crazy. This time around, I'm not going to react in that way. This time, I'm going to be sweet in the midst of their saltiness. And we've done it really, really well. Once, twice, three times. But by the seventh time they said that thing to us, we couldn't hold back anymore. And we spouted off and we said the thing that we were biting our lip knowing we shouldn't say. And now we look back and the relationship has been destroyed. And time again, we find ourselves wondering, why is it that we make irrational decisions? Why is it that we made that choice and thought that that was the best possible choice to be made? And the answer to that question is simply this. The answer to that question lies in the title video that we just watched. The reason why we so often make irrational decisions in our lives is because somewhere along the way, the wires in our minds have gotten crossed. Because of mistakes and regrets in our lives, the way in which we process and think through things isn't the way in which God designed us to process and think through them. And the bad news is this, is that when the wires of our mind get crossed, it doesn't just relegate itself to those one-off regrettable decisions. Our crossed wires slowly find themselves creeping into every facet of our lives. Our crossed wires affect the way we look at ourselves. Our crossed wires affect the way we look at our circumstances. Our crossed wires even affect the way we look at the solutions to the unfair circumstances that we are walking through. But here's the good news. There is a way for us to uncross the wires of our mind. There is a way for us to step back into the driver's seat and become the masters of our mind that God created us to be. He designed us to have a healthier thought life. And in turn, in a healthier thought life, he designed us to have a better life in general, to have better marriages, better parenting, better finances that stemmed from an uncrossed wired mind. And what's so incredibly cool is this, is that in our lives, when we find ourselves being able to uncross the wires and take the steps that are necessary, that's what this series is about, taking the steps necessary to uncross the wires in our mind. When we're able to take those courageous steps, one small one at a time, here's what's so incredible. Not only does it affect the good moments of our lives and make the good moments better, but what it also does is this. When our wires are uncrossed in our minds, it allows us to look at the seemingly unfair circumstances that we encounter in our lives in a completely different way, in a much healthier way. The bad moments of our life don't seem so bad, that we carry a different perspective. And you're saying, Ben, how do you know that? How can you see that? Why do you want to pass that on to us? Well, we see that example happening in a perfect way in the life of a man named Paul. Now, if you know nothing about Paul, Paul was a guy who wrote a good portion, many letters in God's love letter, God's instruction manual to you and I. And what we know about Paul is that Paul had a really up and down journey. Paul started his life in the early years of his adulthood as someone who persecuted and hunted Christians. And then he found himself coming face to face with Christ on his way to Damascus, and essentially from there he was converted and became Christian. But in his ministry and his mission journeys, what we also know about Paul is this. Paul frequented jail. He was constantly being arrested for talking about this guy named Jesus and being beaten and going through all of these seemingly unfair circumstances. And in light of those unfair circumstances, what Paul began to see about himself is this. Is that in this life, when we go through troubles, the very first place that those troubles will wreak havoc in is our mind, is our thought life. That it will begin to beat us down from the inside out. And in light of knowing that, Paul began to pen these letters to different churches all across the land where he lived. And essentially, as Paul penned this letter that we're going to dive into today to the church in Philippi, he got all through this entire letter and he comes to his closing comments. And he begins to think, what do I want to leave them with? What are my parting shots? And I can just imagine that Paul and all he's been through and all the persecution and all the hurt and all the stops in jail, I'm sure there are a million things that came to the mind of Paul. That maybe the appropriate way to finish off this book is to write to them about my struggles and how you persevere through the struggles and the hardships of life. Maybe it's an appropriate place to win them over and to begin to explain to them, look at all the incredible things that I've done in my life in spite of all the seemingly unfair circumstances I have gone through. Look how hard my life is. Look what I'm presently doing. Not once in this writing, this letter, do we see Paul ever even mention being in jail. He could have said, I'm writing about all of these credible things and I'm stuck in a jail cell behind bars with absolutely no hope. But Paul doesn't choose any of those closing comments. He chooses something completely different. Because what Paul recognizes is this. That hundreds of years, thousands of years later, there will be people who are walking through seemingly unfair circumstances just like I am. And they will struggle with their thought life. And they will struggle with their minds. And in those unfair circumstances, the anxiety and the worry and the stress and the fear will begin to close in on them. And I want to begin to write to them about a way out. About a way to overcome those things in your life so that you can get back to the place God designed you to be in your mind as the master of it. And so in his closing comments, he begins to write about just that. That no matter what circumstances you're going through, this is where your mind must look if you want to come out the other side healthy. This morning, we're going to jump into the book of Philippians, chapter 4, starting in verse 8. If you haven't done so already, it's an incredible time for you to grab your weekly. It's what you got when you came in this morning. And if you crack that open, inside you'll find a notes page. If you pull that out, you can follow along in this text and all the ones to come, as well as even take some notes, fill in the blanks as we go. If that's not your style, as you can see, everything will come up on the screen for you as well. But here is this incredible final parting shots that Paul writes to you and I in the middle of his dire circumstances. Check this out in verse 8. It says, "And now, dear brothers and sisters," that's you and I, "one final thing. Fix your thoughts on what is true and honorable and right and pure and lovely and admirable." Now, I don't know if any of y'all have experienced this before. I have not experienced this, but I can only imagine how difficult it would be to put pen to paper and to write that very thing, that very sentence down on a piece of paper in the midst of the circumstances that Paul was walking through. Fix your thoughts on what is true and honorable and right and pure and lovely and admirable. All I've had to fix my eyes on for the past weeks and months and years are these cinder block walls, are these bars that just keep staring back at me, is the same slop that just keeps getting pressed underneath my jail cell to eat day after day after day, is this reality that I don't know if I'm getting out, that I don't know if I'm going to die in this place. And in the midst of all of that, he writes, fix your thoughts, not on all of that, but on what is true and honorable and right and pure and lovely and admirable. Think about things that are excellent and worthy of praise. And why would Paul write that? Because I think that Paul understood this truth that we introduced last week. This truth that in every single one of our lives, your life and my life is always moving in the direction of our strongest thoughts. What are your strongest thoughts? Or maybe it's better termed this way. What are you thinking about most? Because whatever it is that we think about most in our minds, our lives are automatically moving in that direction. If you have a negative thought life, check this out. You will always find the negative in every single situation. You all okay? If you have a negative thought life, you will find the negative in your spouse. No matter how good they treat you, no matter how great of a spouse they are, if you have a negative thought life, you will see every negative in that person. If you have a negative thought life, you will see the negative in every job and every boss you encounter. It will never be good enough. It will never be fair enough. They will never treat you right enough. You'll find the negative in every single relationship you enter into and how ridiculous they're acting. The things that they're saying that aren't right. You begin to take your opinion over their intentions. And I know their heart, and it just wasn't right. And they meant to hurt me in that. You see, you can't have a positive life with a negative thought life. It just doesn't work that way. Because our lives are always moving in the direction of our strongest thoughts. A negative thought life will always lead to a negative life, will always lead to a negative marriage, will always lead to negative parenting. But in light of that, if you're anything like me, I find myself asking this question. How did the wires in my mind get so crossed? How did I end up here, where all of those thoughts just keep closing in and I feel like I can't overcome them? You see, the reason that we find ourselves here is because for so many of us, if not all of us, we have never realized the importance of training our mind. For so many of us, we find ourselves here because our minds just can't help it. We have been told for years and years and years the importance of brain development, right? And in our kids' lives and our grandkids' lives, we do everything we possibly can to make them as smart as we possibly can and to remove any obstacle in their way of achieving whatever academic goals it is that we have set for them. And so we read to our kids at night from the time they are newborns, and we try to put them on the correct path by giving them the absolute best education that we can. We acknowledge the need for brain development, but what we often ignore is the need to develop our minds. Is the need to do what we can to ensure a healthy thought life. And what we often overlook is this truth that having a healthy mind is accomplished in much the same way as we accomplish having a healthy body. Here's what I mean. For some of you, you made New Year's resolutions that this was going to be the year that you finally got in shape. You made a New Year's resolution that this was finally the year that you were going to become healthy physically. And so over the course of the last couple of months, you've been frequenting the gym. And you see the exact same people there. And for some of y'all, you come across a person or a couple of people and you're like, man, they're very regular. They're here all the time. They're here every single day that I'm here. But over the course of the last 2 months, I really haven't seen any change in them. Sometimes it's longer than that. Over the course of the last 5 years, they've been going to the gym and there really hasn't been any outward change that we can see in that person. And the reason so often when it comes to our body changing for the better and why we don't see that happening is because we overlook this foundational truth that it isn't just about what we do with our body, it's just as much about what we put into our body. And you see, that same truth also applies to your mind and my mind. That if we want to get healthier and take steps forward to become the masters of our mind again, to begin to push out the anxiety and the worry and the stress and the depression and the negativity and the pessimism in our lives, that if we want to be able to do that, we have to acknowledge that it isn't just about walking into this room and sitting here for 30 minutes and then saying, I'm going to have a positive thought life. I've determined that's what I'm doing from this point forward. You see, it's just as much about making a determination of we are going to get healthier about what we put into our minds so that it can become healthier, so that it can leave all of those things in the dust. If you want to train your mind to have a better thought life so that ultimately, right, ultimately you can have a better life. A better thought life moves towards a better life. We must realize that the health of our mind isn't just about what we do with it. It has to begin by taking steps to ensure what we're putting into it is the best we can possibly do. That we enter, just like we do in our bodies, into this training of our minds. That we have gotten to this place because we have neglected it. But we want to get out of this place and take steps forward to a healthier place because we are going to intentionally enter into some training. And last week, I introduced these first two concepts to you, these first two truths that I believe were the first two steps for us to take steps forward to become the masters of our mind. And I asked you to identify the one thought that's holding you back. The top thing in your life that leads you to that place of anxiety or fear or worry or stress. And then once you've identified that thought, then to name the truth that destroys that stronghold, that demolishes that lie in your life. And I said, this week, we're going to build upon that. And we're going to take it a couple of steps further. And each week, we're going to introduce a couple of new steps to help us, one step at a time, get towards the thought life that we always wanted. And so this morning, we take those steps forward. We acknowledge that it's about entering into a training process with our mind, making conscious decisions to get healthier. In order to do that, the first step that we must take when it comes to training our mind is this. To train our minds to get healthier, we must make a determination that we are going to focus daily on God's truth. Now, I know right now there are some of you in this room who are skeptical about this whole church thing, who might say, I don't even have a relationship with Jesus Christ. And Ben, you're going to lead with that one, and that throws a whole lot of red flags up in the air right off the bat. And here's what I want you to know. I get that. I acknowledge that. I understand that some of us are struggling with this concept right off the bat, but here's what I'm asking of you. If you'll just stick with me for just a minute, I want to do my very best to make that hurdle a little bit less difficult for every single one of us, whether you have a relationship with Christ or whether you don't. You see, let's look at the reasons why we have this negative thought life, the reasons why we struggle with worry and anxiety and fear and stress and depression. You see, the primary reasons why so many of us struggle with those thoughts in our lives is this. It's because for far too long, we have been believing lies about who we are. About our value, our worth, our identity. About what we see looking back in the mirror every morning when we get up. Or we find ourselves struggling with those thoughts because of lies that have crept into our life about our circumstances, and about how bad they are and how unfair they are, and about what the outcome may be of those circumstances. Or lastly, we find ourselves struggling with those thoughts because of lies that have been created in our life about how we solve the circumstances in our life. For example, for many of us, when we face unfair circumstances in our lives, when we face unpleasant circumstances in our life, our natural reaction is to begin to believe that in order for me to feel better about myself and my deficiencies, what I need to do is point out somebody else's deficiencies. And ultimately, by pushing someone else down, it elevates me. By making someone look worse than myself, it makes me look better. And so for a really long time, we've bought into that lie about the fix to our circumstances. And then coming out the other side, what we realize, right, is it never quite works out that way. That pushing someone else down for the betterment of ourselves never actually makes us feel any better about ourselves in the long term. Because tomorrow morning, we're gonna wake up and we're still gonna see the exact same deficiencies and shortcomings in the mirror, and all of those thoughts are gonna creep back to the surface. And then we believe the solution is, well, it didn't work to bash that person yesterday, so why don't we try a new one today, and maybe pushing that person down a little bit further will make me feel a little bit better. And it's this irrational, wires crossed group of lies that we have been believing for far too long. But what's so incredibly cool is this, is that we have a God who speaks things over you that are in direct contrast to every lie you've ever believed about yourself, your circumstances, or the solution to your circumstances. We have a God that looks at you in spite of your past, in spite of the mistakes we all make, the brokenness we all have, the messiness that is in every one of our lives. He looks at us and he deems this to be true. No matter what you do, nothing you could do could ever cause me to love you any less. Nothing you could ever do ever drops your value and your worth in my eyes. You are fearfully and wonderfully made. You are the pinnacle of my creation. You have value. You have worth. You are a world changer. You can do something incredible. Your marriage is worth it. You bring something to the table. There is a truth that combats every lie that's taken us down a path we don't want to go. And those truths come from the one who created us. This blows my mind every time I say it. The one who knows us best and yet still loves us most. I can barely comprehend that. That if I knew everything about you, I can admit I probably wouldn't love you most. And yet our God does that. Why wouldn't we want that truth to be a part of the equation in our lives? Why wouldn't we want to focus on that instead of the things that are destroying us and our thought life and our minds? Why not get into the words of the one who wants to proclaim truth over every lie in your life and in my life? Instead of focusing on the negative, to develop a habit, to enter into training, that we are going to focus, that we are going to meditate on the positive things that can be brought to the table in our lives. And all of a sudden, I throw out this word, meditation, and for so many of us, you're like, oh boy, here we go. Walked into a progressive church. They're starting to throw out this word, meditation, that means something about being one with the universe. But somewhere along the way, we've misconstrued the definition of this word. Meditation has nothing to do with some being one with the universe religion. You see, the original definition of meditation was this. It's to engage in a mental exercise, to engage in training, right? To focus one's thoughts on the things in which they should be focused on in order to have the best life possible. We spend our time focusing our minds, our thoughts, on the things that are going to give us the best outcome, the best life possible. And you want to talk about a guy who went through an awful lot of unpleasant circumstances in his life? David. David writes these next two passages that I just absolutely love in the book of Psalms on the back end of him making mistakes in his marriage, making mistakes in his parenting, making mistakes in the leadership of his company, of his country. He had made all of these mistakes, and yet he comes back to this one place where he writes this in Psalm 119 and then follows it up in Psalm 143. Check this out. He says, I meditate on your precepts and consider your ways. I delight in your decrees. I will not neglect your word. In light of my mistakes and my unpleasant circumstances, this is where I come back to time and time again. It's on what you wrote about me and who I am and the truth about my value and my worth and the things that lead to the best life possible. Because I believe with all of my heart, God, that you want me to have the best life possible. And so I come back to your word that proclaims just that. But he doesn't stop there. He continues in this way in Psalm 143. I meditate on all your works and consider what your hands have done. What is David saying here? David is saying, not only do I choose to focus, meditate, on your words and what you speak over me, but I also choose to do this. I also choose to look back on my life at the unfair circumstances that I've already walked through. And I choose to see the ways in which you've brought me through those things. And I've seen you move. You move the mountains, and I believe you're going to do it again. So why am I worrying? Why am I stressing? Why am I feeling anxiety over this? Because you've proved to be faithful. Shameless song plug that we just sang. That we look back on the ways in which God has provided in the moments where we didn't know how we were going to keep the lights on, how we were going to put food on the table, how we were going to get through this, how we were going to come through that diagnosis. And we see the ways in which he's provided time and time again, and we choose to focus on those things instead of focusing on how bad things could turn out in light of our present circumstances. That's what it looks like to focus on God's truth, to focus on God's word. And let me just say this. When I talk about this concept of getting into God's word, I think oftentimes we've generated this misconception about what that means. We've thought that probably God, if we're doing it right, the only way we should get into God's word and read this thing is if we're doing it like at least 2 hours a day. And that just seems absolutely impossible. Now, let me say this. For my life, if I were in his word 2 hours a day, would my life be better and my outlook be a whole lot better? Heck yeah. But this is about just taking small steps in the right direction. This isn't about biting off more than you can chew. This isn't about getting it perfect the first time around. I think God delights in and honors the small steps that we take all along the way. Where we don't try to do it in one big, giant leap, but we just stay faithful to doing a little thing to regain control of our minds and become the people that God created us to be. And when we make that decision that I'm going to get in there, even if you don't believe, it's okay to jump in and try it before you believe it. To see if it makes any difference in your life to have his truth spoken over you, even if you're not sure you believe it. But when we make that commitment, what we also must commit to in this training phase of our minds is this, is that even when it gets hard, we are going to keep going. Because it will get hard. And there will be times, just like when you jumped on the treadmill and you started running, that there will be moments after the first half mile where you're like, I want to quit. And I feel like my lungs are collapsing in on me. And I don't know if I can keep going. And why is there that pain that just keeps coming up right there? And I want this to go away. But when we just keep going, what we know is that slowly that pain begins to go away. Slowly we begin to build stamina. Slowly it becomes natural. Slowly we begin to get the benefits of that training in our lives. And so we have to be committed, even when it gets hard, that in the end this will be worth it. And so we keep going, even on the days it feels monotonous, even when the busyness creeps in, even when we'd rather be doing something else. That this is worth it in the long run. And so I'm going to continue to train myself to put the right things in. But then what we do is we follow up step one with maybe the most practical step of this entire series. When we get into God's word and we, right, name that truth that demolishes the stronghold, the lies in our life, the practical step that we must take is this, is that we write down the truth and we read it daily. We write down that one truth and we find a way to read it every single day. There's this incredible passage in the book of Deuteronomy. I love this. It's at a time where the Israelites are just beginning to get their life back together. And God comes to them and he says this, you want to have the best possible life. Here is how you have the best possible life. And he gives them this command that many of us have heard. You must love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength. And in order for you to do that in your life, this is what it's going to require. Check this out in Deuteronomy chapter 6, starting in verse 7. Repeat them again and again to your children. Talk about them when you are at home and when you are on the road, when you are going to bed and when you are getting up. Tie them to your hands and wear them on your forehead as reminders. Write them on the doorpost of your house and on your gates. In this passage, it's this reminder. The circumstances and the busyness of our lives will try to block out the truth within days. That truth that we have found that combats every lie that is bringing us back towards anxiety and worry and fear and stress. The busyness and the circumstances of our life will come rushing back in and do everything possible to block that truth out. If we let it. We don't have to let it. We can fight back. We can do something about this. And doing something about this looks as practical as this one step. Write it down somewhere. Write it down somewhere where you will see it daily. Write it down somewhere where you will see it frequently. Maybe for some of us, that looks like writing it down on the mirror of our bathroom. For some of us, it looks like writing it on something and sticking it in our underwear drawer. And it's the ultimate double whammy, because not only will you see it daily, but it will also remind you to get clean underwear every single day. And we come back to this truth again and again and again. We find someplace, it's in the fridge. The diet's gone and we're getting in the fridge all the time, but at least we're seeing that truth spoken over us every single day. We find a place, we write it down, and then we read it daily because we are tired of the thoughts we have and we are ready to fight back. And we know that life has this uncanny way of allowing all of the other junk to cover up God's truth in our life. But then once we take those steps of allowing the good stuff in on a regular basis, there's a final step that's equally important. We have to stop letting in some of the stuff into our mind. We have to stop letting some things into our minds. It's much like our diet, right? There's no such thing as balancing out. It's not like my life used to consist of Big Macs and Cokes, and now I want to get healthier, and so the way that I balance it out is I still have the Big Mac, but I change it to a Diet Coke. No, the Diet Coke would be much better paired for the long run of our lives and our health if we got rid of the Big Mac altogether and the Diet Coke got paired with the fruit and yogurt parfait, right? That we stop letting some of the junk into our bodies so that we can get healthier. The same is true of our minds. That we take a good hard look, that we gauge the negative things that are going into our minds, our hearts, and we find a way to slowly eradicate them from our lives. Now, I want to drop this on you. And you might need to hang on to something around you because this might be a y'all okay moment. You see, if you're sitting there this morning and you're struggling with constant negative thoughts as it pertains to your spouse, then maybe meeting with that group of people who every time you get together complain about their lazy husband or their nagging wife, maybe those relationships need to end. Maybe there needs to be new boundaries put into place in your relationship so that you stop letting those things into your mind. If you struggle with anxiety because of financial stress, maybe this is a moment in your life where you need to make a decision that I'm not going to go to that store, to that place where I find myself constantly overspending every single time. And there's something that's always calling my name that I always need, and yet it's always leading me to this place where I feel the stress and the weight of financial debt that keeps pressing in on me because I overdo it every time I walk into there. Maybe the GPS needs reset, and that doesn't go in there anymore, and we get that out of our lives. If we struggle with the negative thoughts that come with this sickness or this diagnosis, what could happen? And what's the worst thing that could happen? Maybe it's time for us to stop looking at all the worst case scenarios on WebMD every day and to begin to not allow some of the things to go into our minds, to get it out. Stop putting the lies in, because what you put in always affects what comes out. What you put in will always affect the outcome and direction of your life. King Solomon says it perfectly. In Proverbs chapter 4, he says, "Guard your heart above all else, for it determines the course of your life." Guard what's going in to your heart. Guard what's going in to your mind. Because whatever you put in will come out. It will determine the direction of your life.
but Ben, what's the point of all of this? What does this look like on the other side when we actually make these changes and are able to rewire our mind and we go through the difficult training process to have different thoughts and put the right things in and not have the wrong things going in? What does this look like? You see, every year around here, we go on a missions trip to our care point in Guatemala. I've been to our care point now 5 times, and every time I've been there, when we land on the ground, this reality presses in on you. That in every discussion and every conversation you have with any child or any care point leader there in Guatemala City, every discussion is always had in Spanish. And for me, I took 3 years of Spanish in high school, and so there were some things that I became good at, but over time, that has faded, and the wires in my mind have gotten crossed as it pertains to that language. And so here's what happens for me every time I enter into conversation. They speak in Spanish. I hear it in Spanish. In my mind, I have to translate it to English, and then I have to translate that into my response in English, and then my response in English, I have to translate back into Spanish, and then speak it in Spanish. And essentially, in all of that crossed wires in my mind that's happening, what ends up coming out is not always what I intended. My response can oftentimes be irrational, can be unproductive. My response can oftentimes destroy the intimacy in relationships. But what I've also realized is this, is that there are some things that as we prepare for the trip, I go back and look at notes and I have the Duolingo app. There are some things like conversational things. What's your name, your family, favorite colors, sports, all those different things. That when we have conversations surrounded about those things that I've trained my mind to memorize, it looks a whole lot different in my mind. I hear it in Spanish. I think it in Spanish. And I just speak it back in Spanish. And the quality of the outcome when my mind works that way is a whole lot different than when the wires are crossed on the inside. And you see, so often what we fail to recognize is that exact same thing happens in the fair and unfair circumstances of our lives when we find a way to uncross the wires. That we stop reacting and responding in the lives we've bought into for far too long, and we start responding and reacting to those circumstances in our lives in a far healthier way because we respond and react from a place of truth now. That's what the benefit is of uncrossing the wires. But doing that can be easier said than done. Doing that requires us to take some proactive steps. I'll finish with this. Last week, I shared with you all my number one thought that holds me back from being who God designed me to be. And that thought was this: I'm not good enough. Almost every single day, I battle in my mind the thoughts of I'm not a good enough leader, I'm not a good enough communicator, I'm not caring enough. I'm not good enough to take this place, knowledgeable enough to take this place where it needs to go or where God intended it to go. And every single day, I know it's difficult for you all to believe, but every single day I feel this weight pressed down on my shoulders of doing everything that I can to accurately portray God's word, to engage a disengaged culture. Every day I feel this weight pressed down on me of what it looks like and what it means to lead a growing church with growing expectations. Every single day I walk into this place and you know what I fight? I fight the battle of what it looks like to please people around every bend, and oftentimes I lose sight of what it really means and looks like to please God above all else. And as I've recognized that about myself and I feel the weight of those things every single day, the moments where I get overwhelmed, here is Ben Carver's typical response. The moments where I feel overwhelmed, I have a tendency to neglect everything else in my life that should be more important and to dive further into how do I fix this myself? How do I get this done on my own? And what I recognized is that I was not being the master of my mind and my thoughts. And so in order to do that, I needed to write down truth and proclaim it over those lies every single day. And so I brought this with me because I wanted to get it right. This is my journal. Guys, if that makes you uncomfortable, we'll just call it a notebook. But in here, I wrote this down, and this is what I've been declaring over the lies in my life every single day, so that that lie of I am not good enough does not get the best of me. First, I love Jesus Christ first. I love my wife second, and will be willing to lay down my life for her. I am enough because he says I am enough. I will give my best to love others and won't be beaten down when my best doesn't meet their expectations. The suffering is only temporary and can be for my benefit. It makes me better and makes him known. And lastly, this city and this world will be better and different because I'm serving Jesus Christ. See, what I realized is this. As I'm tired of losing the battle in my mind. But in order to get to a place where I can win the battles like God designed me to live, I have to go into a training process. It doesn't just happen by chance. It doesn't happen by accident. It happens when we make choices to follow God's direction and say, I'm only letting the good stuff in and I'm not letting the bad stuff in anymore. Because I can't keep going on fighting the anxiety and the fear and the worry and the depression and the negativity and the pessimism. I want better than that. God wants better than that for me, and he designed me to be the master of my mind. But in order to do that, one small step at a time, not biting off more than I can chew, I have to be courageous enough to start putting some things in place to make that happen. Are we ready to start training our mind so that we can become the masters that he created us to be? Will you pray with me? Father, this morning, we thank you for what a great God you are. And we thank you that you are a God who loves us so much. The truth that you constantly proclaim over us is this: nothing you could do could cause me to love you any less. I know the worst about you, and yet I still love you most. And I love you enough to give you direction on what it looks like to take back captive your thoughts, to become the master over your mind and your thoughts that I've created you to be. But God, in this room this morning, I pray for myself first and foremost because I know this is a daily struggle for me. God, I want to be courageous enough, even if there's some pain in the short term, to daily start putting the right things into my mind. And then also daily to start gauging the things that I'm putting into my mind that shouldn't be there. The conversations I'm having that I shouldn't be having because it's taking me down this path of negativity that only leads to worry and stress and anxiety in the midst of my circumstances. God, may we individually, may we as families stand tall and say, I'm tired of losing the battle. I want to take back control. I want to start training so that I can start winning. It's in your name that we pray. Amen.